Hi, I'm Katrina Daniel, and welcome to Primetime Crime, a podcast for people who want to know what goes on behind the scenes of the most notorious trending crime stories and what's going on in the minds of those involved in those stories. What are the detectives, the judges, the defense attorneys, and the prosecutors thinking? You'll hear it all on Primetime Crime, the podcast. This is Primetime Crime. I'm Katrina Daniel, and I'm going to bet those of you who watch news have seen the really horrible video of the guy who killed the homeless men in D.C. and New York City. One victim, a homeless gentleman, was sound asleep on the sidewalk. Then you see a guy in a hoodie walk up and very calmly shoot him point blank. After about 9 days of looking for him, police in Washington, D.C. have arrested 30-year-old Gerald Brevard III for attacks on homeless men there. And of course, Gerald Brevard Jr., the perp's dad, says, "Oh, he's mentally ill and the system has failed him." Shocker. I've got two stellar guests today, WPIX reporter who covers crime in New York and New Jersey, Andrew Ramos, and criminal defense attorney Michael Rosen, to break all of this down for us.
This from NBC4 in New York.
We've got our man, 30-year-old Gerald Brevard of Southeast D.C. was taken into custody by our partners in the Washington field office of the ATF.
Police say Brevard shot five men, all homeless, in New York City and Washington, D.C. over the last 2 weeks. Two of the victims died, including one in Soho. Police do not know why Brevard allegedly targeted homeless men or what he was doing in New York City.
Well, he has no connections to New York, as far as we can see. He's mostly a D.C. guy and other states down south.
Police believe Brevard took public transportation back and forth between D.C. and New York. They say all the victims were shot with the same gun. The surviving victim, shot here on King Street, says he's grateful to be alive.
My guest today, or the person that knows a lot about this, and I'm really excited to talk to Andrew Ramos from WPIX in New York City. A, it's a really cool job. Congratulations. You must have a blast.
Yeah, you know, it's never a dull moment. I think with New York City, we always have something going on. And unfortunately, this kind of took a lot of the airwaves and attention this week.
Okay, let's talk about Gerald Brevard III, which sounds like a really hoity-toity nice name for a guy who apparently is not so nice.
Yeah, not so nice at all. Gerald was a guy who was the subject of a manhunt for the past 9 days. It started in Washington, D.C., in our nation's capital, and came up to New York, unfortunately. Now, it started on March 2nd, his first shooting. So it's five shootings altogether. Three of them happened in D.C., two of them in New York, and two of them were fatal. And one was fatal in D.C., the second one was in New York. And again, he sparked a manhunt that crossed state lines. And they were able to finally arrest him on Tuesday. And he really sent a lot of chills and fear among many of the communities, both in both cities, because he was targeting homeless men.
What do you know about him at this point in time?
Well, what we do know about him is that he suffered from severe mental illness. We know that because his father had come forward after he was arrested, because it was very unclear why he was doing what he was doing.
Right.
So there was a lot of questions, and still a lot of questions remain at this point. But what we did find out was that he was homeless himself, and he was targeting, homeless peers in this case. And he was, unfortunately, someone who had a history of crime. He had a criminal history in several states, Maryland, D.C., down in Virginia, and now in New York. He's facing some charges now. So he had, unfortunately, mental illness that was not being addressed. He's now being charged in D.C. for these for the murder and the shootings that happened there. And he's still waiting charges here in New York.
When do you think the New York police will charge him? Because, I mean, honest to God, if you look at the video, it's pretty compelling.
Yeah, no, it's jarring. I think if the video, anyone who sees the video is just, it's just shocking because he's very nonchalantly just goes up to a sleeping homeless man and shoots him. And it's just horrible to watch.
Yeah.
But at this point, the New York City police, they're very confident that they have their man. They believe they've matched the ballistics. They've matched the clothing that he was wearing when he was arrested and what he was wearing during the surveillance footage. So I think they're confident they have their man. It's just a matter of seeing the process go through in D.C. first, and then they're going to try to get him in New York with the additional charges.
Well, since he crossed state lines, that makes it a federal crime as well, right?
I believe it does. And I believe there's a whole process involved where he needs to be extradited now. And it's a completely different process. So it really depends if he's going to fight it. We don't know if he's going to be a representative, if he has an attorney yet. But yeah, it's still, again, the investigation is still ongoing. They want to see if he was tied to any more crimes, any more shootings in the D.C. area before they move him.
Seems like a good time to bring in Michael Rosen, criminal defense attorney.
Extraordinary,
really in his own words. No, but Michael, would you take the defense of this guy?
Sure.
Why?
Everybody deserves a defense, and he may well have one. Mental insanity is a defense, recognized, accepted. When I went back and did a little looking on the case, you know, the first question would be one of identity. Do they actually have the right guy? Yeah. And while we may all presume that to be the case, and it very well may be the case, certainly that's an issue. But the defense of mental insanity is you first of all have to acknowledge I'm the guy. So by acknowledging that he is the guy, then the question becomes, what was his state of mind at the time he committed the crime? And I will just tell you what caught my attention, having tried a few cases where insanity was actually a defense. So he apparently works social media, and he put out some sort of statement saying, and I'm sure Andrew knows this, feeling devilish, feeling godly. All right. So number one, he's working social media. Number two, he's putting out thoughts about how, what his thoughts are, presumably, arguably, about this conduct. And so, you know, I have seen prosecutors on an insanity case that I've tried take the ordinary run-of-the-mill conduct and say, look, if he's working social media and he's bragging about this and how good he feels about it, that's not the conduct of an insane guy.
Correct.
And so, you know, that caught my attention, having experienced that kind of process in an insanity case that I've tried. On the other hand, as Andrew pointed out, number one of the reasons the judge denied him bond is because he missed a trial on another case. And number two, He did not accept the offer of mental health that came with that other case. He rejected it. And lastly, of course, you look at the conduct itself. I mean, apparently, at least what I've read, one of the things he did after he shot this poor man, you know, sleeping, is he sat down beside him, according to what I was reading, and played some loud music. So you know, you have these balancing factors of, in a forensic sort of way, it's an interesting case. You've got a guy that's homeless, is clearly not well, but is he not well enough to be incompetent or insane? And those are two different issues.
Andrew, describe some of the social media post and some of his actions after he allegedly, with air quotes, killed this one homeless gentleman.
Well, I mean, the one post that Michael did mention is that one that was widely shared, widely reported on. We didn't get that far back into his social media history because, again, I'm just speculating at this point, but he is homeless, and I'm not sure if he had access to certain digital devices, but it was a very sporadic kind of posting that he did. And it was very good that you mentioned that, was the fact that he did post about it, and he did kind of premeditated in a way, and it's gonna definitely be used against him,
yes,
in court, because it's evidence at this point.
Yeah.
And what's also important to mention, because he did get out of trial in, I believe, in Virginia. And he apparently, the attorney that was representing him proved that he was mentally unfit to be in trial, and he was able to get off on that case. So, I mean, it's something that he has used in the past, and I'm not sure how it's going to play around this time around. But again, his father gave a few interviews about his son, and he described his son as mentally ill, and also talked about how he constantly talks in the third person, and he was always a feeling that he was being followed and chased. So again, obviously there's certain things that are not being connected when it comes to how he presents himself in society. And again, all these are moving parts that are going to probably be presented when they see a judge.
A couple of observations. Apparently, at least again, from what I'm reading, he did have a cell phone because they apparently tracked his location by this cell phone. So for whatever that's worth, one way or another. And I'll also just point out lawyer talk here. Whether or not he's competent right now to even defend himself is one issue. A second issue is, if he is competent, was he insane at the time of the crime? So those are two separate legal issues that the courts will have to go through.
He's got a history of this. You would think someone would have caught it.
Yeah, well, look, how often...
You can't
apparently, he's not a very good, very not a successful criminal because he's been arrested a bunch of times. So he may not be very good at his trade, but it seems pretty clear that he does have some mental issues. But, you know, the courts are set up now to make it very difficult to win an insanity defense.
An insanity case, yeah.
And by the way, just so it's out there, if he does, he doesn't get released. He gets put into an institution until he is sane. And if anybody has done an analysis on this, they have found that a lot of times, maybe not in this case for the nature of the crime, a lot of times they will end up serving more time in an institution than they would having been convicted and gone to prison.
What else do you know about him, Andrew? He's not been extradited to New York yet. What do you think the holdup might be?
I think at this point, it really depends on making sure that he is their guy. Because, again, the ballistics did match. There were certain things that were matching. But it's a matter of just proving that. And it really depends on who you talk to. A lot of the law enforcement here in New York, they're very confident that this guy is their guy. He is still named a person of interest. I mean, that's what they labeled him. They didn't label him anything else outside of person of interest. So it's just a matter of watching just the process kind of take flight and just materialize, I should say.
If they're going to extradite him, they're going to have sufficient evidence to put in front of a judge to do that.
And that's what they're working on right now. Obviously, the investigation is ongoing. It's still ongoing.
He's been incarcerated. He's pending serious charges in Washington. It's not like they have to do this tomorrow. They're on some ticking clock.
Exactly.
They have the luxury of some time here to put together their case in New York.
Well, how compelling do you think the video evidence is, Andrew?
I think the video is probably the biggest piece of the evidence they have at this point. And again, for those who have not seen it, it is incredibly difficult to watch because he walks up to the sleeping guy and he kicks him a few times to make sure he's there. And then he shoots him point blank range. And it's shocking. And Michael, you did mention that he was playing music afterwards. Yeah. So again, prosecutors say he appeared to even be celebrating or kind of reacting to what he just did. Yeah. So it's shocking video, and it's definitely going to be a big part of their evidence.
For those people who haven't seen the video of what Gerald Brevard III, describe it for us, that incident that you continue to refer to.
Okay, well, first of all, the common thread with all the victims, they were all sleeping. They were all homeless, and it all happened between midnight and 4 a.m. So it was a time when nobody's on the streets, really. So this particular incident, the shooting that happened, it was actually the last of the five shootings that happened and the second fatality. They're in the Soho area of New York City, and he's walking up to him. He's sleeping on the side of the curb. The guy is wrapped up in a yellow blanket, so you can't really see much of anything, but you can see that it's a form of a body, sleeping body, sleeping man. And he just kind of walks up to him. He looks at him. He kicks him a few times, not really hard, but just to make sure that it is an actual body. And then he looks to the side, looks both ways, takes a gun out, and then shoots him. And it's just shocking because it happened so quick. You have no idea when you're watching the video what's going to happen. And then he just takes the firearm out and he shoots him. And it's, again, the investigators called it jarring. They described it as jarring.
Which it is, because I've seen it several times. I'm not sure if you're able to tackle this question, but it seems to me the New York subways have regressed greatly recently, and it's gotten really scary. Can you talk to me a little bit about that, or is that not something that you're in comfortable
with? Yeah, no, we could touch on it. It's a problem that we've probably seen. Crime has surged, especially with the pandemic, for a very long time. Many of the trains were not working round the clock because they kind of scaled back travel, mass transportation, because nobody was using it. So I guess it was a way to kind of save money and save time and actually encourage people to stay home during the height of the pandemic. So what had happened is many of the homeless people who did not have anywhere to go, they were setting up shop in the subway. And I think when the reopening started happening and people started going back to work, a lot of these homeless people lost where their places of sleep and where they were going out to hang out and do stuff. And now it's in a way, I mean, depending on who you talk to and where you get your data, it's really translated into an uptick in crime. And yeah. You're seeing that in the subways, you're seeing that in the streets, and you're seeing that in really nice neighborhoods. And here in New York, Midtown is just, in some parts of it are unrecognizable because you're seeing so many of the tarps and the tents that are going up, and they're going up, they're going down, they're going up. And it's just, you don't know if you take one wrong turn down the wrong street, it could result in possibly a robbery or attack.
That's really heartbreaking. I'm sorry. It just is horrible.
I have a question. How is the mayor addressing this? I heard that he has a crime, I'm going to call it a crime plan. Anything on that, Andrew?
Yeah, in all honesty, I didn't cover that angle of the mayor. I know he, in the beginning, wanted to crack down on homeless people sleeping in the subway. And it was as part of his plan on how to clean up the mass transit situation. But I think he, for the most part, was trying to offer something that Mayor de Blasio, his predecessor, was not offering and putting on the table. Mayor de Blasio had a very subtle approach on how he decided to handle the homeless. He set up a lot of homeless hotels, which was a very controversial situation here in New York, where they were basically living in these four or five-star hotels, and the city was providing funding to the hotels to fill them up during the time when the pandemic had emptied them because nobody was traveling to New York. So that caused a lot of controversy and within those communities, because during the day, the homeless people would come out. And unfortunately, many of them suffer from mental health issues. So they're going out and they're starting trouble. And then they get to go back into this nice hotel at the end of the day. And again, that was something that de Blasio had left behind and Eric Adams now had to clean up. So again, I think Eric Adams is just trying to figure out how to approach this situation. I think one of the big policy things that he pushed initially was to make sure that they were not sleeping in mass transit, causing trouble in mass transit. And I think that's the first approach that he had. Right now, we're about 3 months into his term. So we have yet to see him do more action when it comes to homeless.
Boy, he's got his work cut out for him, as pretty much everyone does these days. Andrew, anything else we should know about Gerald Brevard III?
Well, I think it's important to know that the investigation is still ongoing. There's still a lot of more incidents that they may be tying him to. It's too soon to tell. DC police are looking into other incidents involving homeless men and other municipalities that are around the area. I know here in New York, Newark and Jersey City are looking into crimes that happened with their homeless and to see if maybe they could link him to that, because he was in that area during that time. So again, investigation is ongoing. So he has been charged for now, but the charges are probably most likely going to be expanded not only here in New York, but possibly in other municipalities.
Great. Andrew, thank you so much for your generous donation of your time. It's really kind of you to talk to us, and I know we'll be hitting you up again. I hope that'll be okay with you.
Of course. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Primetime Crime, the podcast. Follow us on Facebook at Primetime Crime and on Instagram and Twitter at PrimetimeCrime_. Post your comments and tell us what true crime stories you'd like to hear about. Subscribe to Primetime Crime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts. Thanks a lot.